Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast that takes you into the world of impact innovation and investments in Israel. I am Alina Shkolnikov-Schwartzman, and I head impact entrepreneurship for the Edmund de Rothschild Foundation in Israel. On our podcast, I set to interview top professionals in the field, entrepreneurs, investors, and field builders, and together we take a deep dive into our local ecosystem. Today, I am very proud to host Keren Corniol-Tambour, co-chief investment officer for sustainability at Bridgewater Associates, the world's largest hedge fund with $160 billion in institutional investments. Hi, Keren.
Hi, Alina. It's great to be here.
Good to hear from you. I'm very excited about our call. I think that a lot of our listeners will learn immensely about the work that you guys are doing with institutional investors. And it's really revolutionary work that we haven't seen here yet in Israel. So I'm looking forward to talking more about that. But first, tell me a little bit about yourself so that our listeners can get to know you before they get to know your work.
Thanks. Well, I was born in Haifa. I grew up mostly in Netanya. I came to the United States to study at Princeton, where Danny Kahneman was my thesis advisor. So I wasn't doing anything really that closely related to what we're talking about here. But for anyone who's picked up any of his awesome books, I think his insights on sort of human nature and how logical reasoning works affected me quite deeply. And I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. Ended up at Bridgewater thinking it was a short stint and I'd probably go back to Israel a few years later. Fell in love with it and the rest is history. I've been there for 15 years.
Let's talk a little bit more about that history. Can you walk us through what Bridgewater does and what is unique about Bridgewater?
So Bridgewater is largest hedge fund in the world. We manage money for institutions, meaning if you are a major pension system, for example, of a country that has many millions of pensioners, if you are a university endowment, whatever large body of capital that needs to be invested around the world, we manage some of their money. And what that means is that, we may take a very small sliver of what they do, invest in markets around the world, but also be talking to them about how to think about the world, what's happening, and how to invest their broader portfolio. And our investment philosophy is unique in that we are, on one hand, very fundamental. And so we really think about cause-effect relationships, what causes what, and deeply understanding what's happening in economies and markets around the world. And at the same time, we are fully systematic, meaning anything we think about then gets sort of, the rules get written down into true algorithms so they can be applied at scale to thousands of investments around the world to make sure that the logic for why you're investing is not just living in, Karen's head or someone's head, but gets to be applied systematically every day. And that frees our heads to be thinking about new ideas all the time.
And Bridgewater is recent to the shift into sustainability, not as recent as others and is really leading the way on it. But still, this isn't something that was in Bridgewater 15 years ago, right?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think we always saw ourselves as our job is to partner with our clients on whatever their goals are and help them engineer and build the best portfolios possible with whatever their goals are. And quite simply, this was not really part of the lingo 15 years ago. What I like to say is that back then, the goals were very much financial, meaning pretty much everyone you talked to wanted the same thing. They wanted the highest possible return relative to risk. And I like to call this kind of two-dimensional investing. You need the highest possible return, but you want to think about your risk. And there's a whole universe of how to study risk. Is it tail risk to the downside, all the different ways you could think about it. In the last few years, there's really a transformational shift going on where people start thinking about that investing, I like to say, in a three-dimensional way, where they start thinking about impact as another dimension. And it's really a whole other dimension because it interacts with risk and return, but it's like another set of goals. And so now we have sort of built out a practice for the first time to say, we can also assist you in making investments that have both financial and sustainability or impact goals alongside one another.
And do you think this is a passing trend or is this finally a social shift that is here to stay?
It feels very permanent and very deep. And so just a few years ago, it was small. It was mostly in Europe. And you could even look and say, that's the fringe. Those are the Europeans. Of course, the Danish want to talk about this stuff, but that's, just them. Now it's really spread. We rarely have a client anywhere in the world that doesn't talk or think this way. And in different regions, it's happening in different ways in terms of what their focus is, which social and environmental issues are most kind of pertinent to them. But everywhere it's happening, it feels very deep because it's not that people are setting up, you know, kind of little groups to say, you know, let's set up this tiny group over here and they're going to do this work. It's much more from the top, or when you talk to heads of institutions and say, what are your most important issues, challenges, and goals? Suddenly social and environmental issues are at the top of their list, and they are really building top down and trying to do things for the whole organization that touch these issues. So that's why it feels very significant to me and very long term.
Drew you into this field? Because you've said 15 years at Bridgewater, you could have gone in different directions with your next steps, and you've recently been nominated to be the co-chair for sustainable investment. And I'm wondering, is this something that was very natural to you, or something that you were very passionate about, or is this a field like any other field?
Well, for me, it was definitely the mix of it felt like bringing together my two passions that never had a home together, you know? And so it was like, I worked for many years in investments, and I was very passionate about it from the perspective of understanding the world. It really felt like to understand what's happening, you really need to understand financial markets and economies because they're so critical to driving the world. I got to study cause and effect relationships all over the world, and I was really passionate about, you know, kind of understanding how things were evolving. And at the core, investing is really about trying to imagine what's going to happen next in the future. So it's a very fun job. But at the same time, I also have always had tremendous passion for social and environmental issues. I just always saw this separate. Like, this is the thing that I do in my free time, whether it's, you know, philanthropy, NGOs, volunteering, whatever. And as soon as, you know, the opportunity grew to start merging these things closer together and start thinking, when you put money to work, you can also think about your impact. That obviously drew me immensely from just pure passion. I didn't know where it would go. So it was about three and a half years ago that we started the earliest explorations, truly as a passion project, to kind of say, I wonder if I could build a portfolio that's as good from a financial return perspective, and also try to have a high bar on impact and sustainability. And it was kind of a challenge then. I didn't know where it would go. I certainly never imagined 3.5 years ago that I would be able to, you know, kind of become a chief investment officer of an area like this. But it really felt like something that brought both sides of my brain and passions together.
That sounds amazing. And you've talked about how you guys, as a strategy, look at the global world and the trends that are driving our global macroeconomies. And I wanted to ask you, what are the trends that you're seeing in the future? Let's say we look at 5-10 years from now. What are the things that you think will be the next frontier of sustainable and impact investing?
Well, you know, something very important happened with the pandemic, which is that it kind of threw the world into what you could think of as the next paradigm of how policymakers can affect the economy, moving it from, you know, it was a very old paradigm, we're just raising and lowering interest rates. Then you moved after the financial crisis to a world where central banks printed money. And now this kind of threw us into a new paradigm where printing money isn't enough. You also need government action, or what they call in English fiscal policy, alongside. So you basically print money, but then have the government literally take that money and do things like send people checks in the mail. And when you go into that world, what it means is that a lot of what will impact markets is actually what governments think is important. And governments, by their nature, think a lot more about social and environmental issues than if they're only, you know, if the only thing that matters is the central bank, you lower the interest rate, and who knows who uses the lower interest rate. And so in that world, it matters a lot more what governments think is important. And I think on the environmental side, we already have a very clear roadmap. We know going to net zero, reducing carbon emissions, that's going to be kind of the guiding principle. And you see a lot of consensus around the world, governments saying that's where we need to go. And that's cascading all the way down to investors, NGOs, markets, everybody trying to align themselves to a pretty specific roadmap of what it would mean to keep climate change under control. On social issues, that question is much more up in the air. of what will become the main social issues that, you know, governments and therefore companies, NGOs, and everybody behind them wants to focus on. I have some ideas of where it might go, but I think that battle has not been won yet in the same way of having a clear roadmap like the environmental one.
So while the battle has not been won yet, I wonder, as on a more personal level, what are the, let's say, top three social challenges that you're seeing around you that really bother you? I don't want to say in the day-to-day, because then it sounds like it's a part of your daily routine, but I mean on a more passionate level. What are the three things that you say, I need these three things not to be in the world that my children will live in?
I think the umbrella of modern slavery is very much at the heart of what I've come to care a lot about, partly because as investors, you have a lot of angle to affect that. But I think under that umbrella, you can take practices that are look like more like child labor, or things that look more like trafficking, or things that look more like really what we think of as slavery that doesn't exist anymore. And the number of people who are in some way under these sorts of systems is pretty staggering. And as an investor, if you tell people, you know, I love this issue because a lot of times investors say, well, I just want to make money. I'm not interested in impact. But if you tell them, do you want to be profiting off of slavery? Because, you know, that can be pretty profitable. It's pretty easy to say, absolutely not. I do not want to be profiting off of something like that. That would be terrible. But then if you tell them, do you have any idea if the investments that you're making, you're actually profiting off of human slavery in some way? The answer is usually no. I really don't know. How am I going to know that answer? And so I think this is a major area where having the impetus to say, we need to go answer that question. We need to go educate ourselves on that issue. We need to make that an important part of how we look at our investments can have major impact in lots of pockets in the world, because it's such a clear issue where you're doing something morally wrong that then can easily create a profit, or by definition, slavery can create a profit, that then can make it into all sorts of goods and services that you and I consume and produce. Australia has actually been the leader in this and has more laws around this. They're starting to say, you know, if you are involved with managing money in Australia, you have to start answering that question, which is great, because then it will create the ecosystem to go answer that question.
Super interesting answer. I didn't think we're going to talk about slavery today, but I think that it's a really, really interesting way to look at this specific idea of making a profit out of things that are considered so completely taboo. And yet many of us with our financial managers probably make a profit out of things that we don't even know can be causing slavery or helping slavery strive in our modern world, and taking it from a more global perspective into a more local perspective. So as a former Israeli, what are the opportunities that you're seeing for the impact market here in Israel today?
Obviously, I don't do much on Israel in my day-to-day because it's a very small market, but it'll always be a key place where my heart is, both where I grew up, where my daughter was born, where I love spending time. And I think Israel is a very unique space to try to have double impact, as this podcast is called. You know, it spans, there's so many businesses you can do in Israel where part of the people that you are either employing, training, or serving are less served communities. You know, Israel is this really interesting economy where more or less, if the only people who participate in it remain the kind of educated minority that are currently participating in it, the country will be stuck. Mm-hmm. Versus if it manages to increase participation and serve communities like the ultra-Orthodox or the Palestinian citizens of Israel, the country can be propelled with, you know, in a different level. And so there's so many businesses and so many opportunities to both make a profit and kind of structurally expand access to opportunity in Israel and expand its economic potential at the same time. That's a very unique situation. The kind of infrastructure is there to do that. You know, last week I was actually working with an entrepreneur VC that I love that do tons of investments in Egypt. And they were talking about how Egypt is, you know, this really, really hot ecosystem where they're trying to build products for, in many cases, the entire Arabic-speaking world. We also have tremendous talent in Israel that can do that with all these secondary benefits on inequality and participation, and then the economy's long-term structural growth rates. So that's probably what I'm most passionate about in the Israeli context. I think it's very unique to find an ecosystem where so many businesses can have that sort of double impact.
Do you think there are any inherent challenges within Israel outside the fact that it's a very small market for global players?
Yeah, it's a very small market. So it basically means that you're never building products in Israel just to serve Israel. It's never going to make sense as a business. And so you're doing something in some ways a lot more difficult. You have to either be a creator of something that by its nature, you can just use Israel to demonstrate that it could scale. And so, you have to be able to demonstrate it could scale in a context other than Israel. It's tough to have the right type of talent that knows how to scale things if they've only ever seen a very small market. That said, a lot of Israelis have spent a lot of time abroad, are very global. Like one of my favorite stories in development economics, I don't think is super well known, is that a lot of Israeli talent actually helped set up a lot of very cool agricultural businesses that then made a big impact in Latin America. For example, Israelis are credited with some of the early teachings of like how to export avocados out of Mexico. And so a lot of the ways that Latin America has sort of grown its exports, some Israelis were involved in teaching them how to do that. And so I think Israelis are very, creative and entrepreneurial in these ways of learning how to get outside of their bubble, but it's certainly a very small market.
And a grandiose question, just before we go to our speeding round, what is the one question that you wake up with and bothers you the most today in your work?
Well, maybe it's more of a personal reflection on strengths and weaknesses, but I just think I feel every day that this field is so big and so exciting that the choice of what to focus on, there's like too many good opportunities. And it's difficult to even focus and say what's the most important thing for me to get done, because it's very rare. And I feel unbelievably lucky to, when I wake up every morning and say, these are the 10 things I could focus on. They all are things that could make a difference in the world. They all are things that I'm super passionate about. This field can use more and more talent. There's more to do than can ever be done in my lifetime.
I think that's a very, very exciting question. And I also think that that means to our listeners that there's a lot of opportunities for them to get more involved in the impact ecosystem, both locally and globally. I'll take us into the lightning round. And it's really a round where I'll ask you really quick questions. And the idea is to give very, very short answers that will hopefully give our listeners some ideas about how they can also participate in the impact revolution. So my first question to you is there a book or a podcast or a movie that you would recommend for listeners who want to get more educated around this field?
The field is evolving very quickly, so I do think that podcasts are a pretty good way of being informed when something is, changing so fast relative to what it was last week. But I can't help but look at on my bed right now, Sir Ronald Cohen's Impact. Good read, not a super long one. You will learn a ton. Highly recommend it.
Totally agree. Here on the table, and also he was the first interviewee for this season, if you want to hear him talk more about the book. The second question is, who is outside of Ronald Cohen? Who is the thought leader that you would recommend following?
Well, let me give an answer that's a little bit on that. I don't know if it's exactly what you intended, which is, I think the leadership Mark Carney has had on climate-related issues is like something to study, because he's really taken climate issues and been able to put them in the forefront and embed them in a really practical way to say, how will we practically make sure the different entities, change their operations, their plans and everything to address getting to net zero. It's like a playbook for impact in many ways. I think many people are going to try to copy it in non-climate areas, but I think it's been tremendous form of like thought leadership and very practical leadership of a vision of kind of where the world could go to make climate very different in terms of how different institutions interact with it.
What would be your number one recommendation for somebody who wants to enter this field and has no idea how to do it?
What I would say is that in this field right now, hiring is kind of exploding, and you have a generation of people that have done investing and don't have a lot of knowledge and experience and things that have to do with impact. even in terms of just the raw, like, language and questions and vocabulary. Like, if you take the climate example, a lot of people that are investing have never talked about emissions in their life. They can't tell you much about what net zero even means. And then suddenly all their clients are saying getting to net zero is my goal. So as a young person trying to enter the field, it's a pretty exciting time where I would say is pursue your passion, get interested and get knowledgeable about whatever it is you're interested in the impact space, and then try to make the transition in terms of know enough about investing as well that you will often be an early person at a firm that is bridging the two sides, that is also coming with knowledge about social and environmental problems and a passion towards impact. Lots and lots of people are hiring in that space. Lots and lots of people are looking for young people that have expertise that the rest of the firm doesn't have. It's hard to sometimes come in with a person with less of that expertise, but it's kind of a wide open space where when you are early in it, you often get to set the direction of what's interesting, what's important, and what you're passionate about can have a big impact on the direction of any firm that you're involved with.
I think that's a wonderful answer. I'll ask you one last question, which we ask all of our interviewees, and I hope you'll give us an honest answer on this. What is your least environmental or social habit?
I have to say flying. There's not a great answer yet about how to fly in an environmentally friendly way. Maybe one day there will be. And COVID notwithstanding, I love flying. I love going to lots of places. Cutting my carbon footprint through flying less would be very sad. So I really hope that there's a path to have a more environmentally friendly jet fuel at some point, but that certainly I think is going to remain my most problematic habit for a while.
So we encourage our listeners to find a better solution to flying and hope that they will let you know once they do so. I want to thank you, Karen, for a really, really interesting interview, and thank our listeners for tuning in. You've listened to another episode of Double Impact. We could not have created this podcast without our producer, Idan Magadish, and production assistant, Ruth Moati. This episode was edited by Ophir Gal, and Evyatar Elad is our marketing specialist. We couldn't have made this podcast without the support of the Edmund Rothschild Foundation in Israel and the help of Impact Nation. You can listen to all of our other episodes on your favorite podcast app. Please rate us so that others can find us as well. And I hope you will join us soon for the next episode of Double Impact.